Today is January. What is today? The 23rd.
Mm-hmm. 2004. Lyndon M. McFoster is here to read at Michigan State University. I guess the first thing I wanted to talk about was you are the first poet laureate. This, people probably ask you about this all the time.
All the time. Even my own mother, yes.
Of Grand Rapids,
that's
Michigan.
Right. That's right.
Well, this is the Michigan Writers Series, so mm-hmm. there's an extra added sort of dimension to this, I think, because it's Michigan. How did this happen?
I'm asking myself. Yeah. Well, I think you have to go back a number of years when John Engler was still governor, and the Michigan Arts Council approached him to fund a poet laureate for the state, a position, Michigan poet laureate, right. And he refused. He said, we don't have enough money in the budget. Mm. Now, what happened after that, Detroit went ahead and their arts council got together and established a poet laureate for Detroit. And it's now Naomi Long Maggett. Mm. It used to be Dudley Randall, but he passed away, he died. So Naomi Long Maggett, took up the mantle. And unbeknownst to me, about 2 or 3 years ago, there was a group in Grand Rapids that wanted to do the same for the city of Grand Rapids, simply mm-hmm. because they knew it wasn't going to be coming from the state, mm-hmm. not anytime soon. I mean, if they didn't have money 8 years ago, they certainly don't have money now mm-hmm. for a position like that. Mm-hmm. So it was the Humanities Council at the Grand Rapids Public Library, another institution housed in another wonderful library, mm-hmm. that came up with the idea. And it took them a while to get funding, and they didn't want to use any taxpayer money. They just mm-hmm. wanted to use either private donations or money from their own budget from the Michigan Humanities Council, and they were able to set that up. I did not even know I was in the running. I think they had something like 4 or 5 finalists.
Did you even know what was going on at the time?
No.
Yeah?
No. You want to know, this is sort of like Cloak and Dagger, has nothing to do with literature, but it makes a great story. When I was first told about this, I sort of wasn't told about this, I got a call from Linda Samuelson. She's the executive director of the Humanities Council at Grand Rapids. Mm-hmm. And she called me the end of March, and she said, I've got something very important to tell you, but I can't tell you over the phone. I said, okay. And she says, I need to see you soon. I said, well, how about next week? She says, no, tomorrow. I said, fine. She says, we have to meet in a public place, and you must not tell anyone we're meeting. So I thought, what is this? I thought, do I have a lien against my house? Did I pay my water bill? Are all the taxes taken care of? And anyway, it was about this poet laureate position. And she just wanted to make sure that it was not made public until the Grand Rapids Press came out mm-hmm. with the article the end of April. With the position and this whole bit, so that's why there was this sort of veil of secrecy for
that
a while.
Is Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, don't tell anyone.
So, what
do I do?
What are you? Well, yeah, what are your duties as poet laureate?
It's a 2-year stint, mm-hmm. and I have 4 official duties a year and a lot of unofficial duties. The official duties really revolve around, for instance, we have a library downtown that had a wonderful renovation completed last spring, and I was commissioned to write a poem mm-hmm. for the reopening of the new old library.
Mm-hmm. It
was wonderful. Wonderful library. And we had a new mayor in Grand Rapids that was just inaugurated a few weeks ago, the end of December. Mm-hmm. I was commissioned to write a poem for his swearing-in ceremony. Mm-hmm. I also am responsible for doing citywide workshops and readings throughout the area. I have a workshop for Hispanic students at the Granville Avenue neighborhood coming up in February that I'll be doing as part of my poet laureate stint. So it's been wonderful. It's been wonderful. I think the main thing was to be available and to want to do something like this and present a more open face to mm-hmm. poetry and not have it just sit on a shelf, but have it be, involved mm-hmm. In the community.
Do you go into schools?
I've done a lot of that for the last 20 years for the Michigan Council for the Arts and Cultural Affairs for the Writers in Schools program, which funding-wise, I've heard through the grapevine that that is, you know, I think their budget has really been sliced for that. Yeah. But I have done a number of things in the past, even before the Poet Laureate role came into my life.
So you continue to do these things
yes.
as well?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which may be a good reason, I have no idea, one of the reasons anyway, why they might have chosen you, because you are a very vocal person for a community for poetry.
Yes, I think for a number of reasons. One, I think my publishing credentials yeah. had a lot to do
oh,
with
sure
it.
Does.
I think they
yeah.
and the quality of the poetry. How I found out how this worked, this whole judging process, they had like four or five finalists, and each member of the board of the Humanities Council mm-hmm. sort of championed you know, each of the finalists, and they talked about the work, and they talked about the teaching credentials, too. And what I've done in my teaching, because I've done teaching on the college level, you know, high school level, all the way from, you know, K through, you know, senior citizen groups, but most of my teaching has really been community-based, mm-hmm. and I think they were very impressed with mm-hmm. that. The yeah. community-based poetry workshop and teaching that I've done.
You mentioned that you read, you were asked to give a reading for the inauguration for...
Yes, George Hartwell, our new mayor.
So how does that strike you as, and this may lead to other sort of
yeah.
things that we
mm-hmm.
can talk about, but how does that strike you as reading at such an overtly political event?
Thank you. Good question. Well, I've never done anything like that before. I'm not what you would call an occasional poet, so I looked at it in a totally different mm-hmm. way. One, I did not want a poem to reflect the political office or the trappings mm-hmm. of the political office. And I know a little bit about George Hartwell, great guy, not a professional politician, not a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Can you dig it?
Mm-hmm.
And he's a community activist,
yeah.
Actually a minister that became a community activist. He also mm-hmm. teaches a leadership, community leadership program at Aquinas College. So he's very active in the community there at Grand Rapids. So what I knew of him, I really wanted the poem to reflect that,
yeah.
not so much the trappings of the office. And yet when I was contacted by the Grand Rapids Press a week before the inauguration, they really wanted a copy of the poem. And I said, well, no. Who deserves a copy of the poem is George Hartwell.
Right.
He should scoop, you know, everyone, not the press.
Mm-hmm.
They said, well, what is it? What is it going to be about? You know, how long is it? They, you know, it's sort of like a
so
kid
you wrote,
asking
you wrote
the
a
teacher.
Program. You wrote a poem for the program.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And I decided to, you know, give myself a little assignment. I looked at the letters of his name. It's very simple, and I did an acrostic.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at the letters in his name, George Hartwell, wrote it down the page, and each line of mm-hmm. the poem began with the letter of his name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was maybe a little bit too much for the press
to realize, yeah.
But anyway, that's what
you
I did.
You didn't point it out?
Well, I did after it was done, but they were so impressed. Like, they really wanted to know how long. It's like a little kid asking a teacher, how long does the report have to be?
Right.
And I thought, you know, it's not going to be huge. It's not going to be an epic. It's not going to be the Iliad.
Right.
And that's what they printed. Quote,
uh-huh.
it's not going to be the uh-huh. Iliad. So, I mean, they love those kind of sound bites, mm-hmm. you know, all the time. The media does. So the title of the poem is called The Movement of Grace.
Mm-hmm.
And it really speaks of just the different times in George Hartwell's life where he really made choices and decisions mm-hmm. to change his life,
mm-hmm.
like running for mayor.
You kind of got lucky, didn't you? I mean, this is your term is only for 2 years, as you
mm-hmm,
said,
mm-hmm.
and someone that you like was elected.
Oh, indeed. I will not mention any names,
yeah.
but I have been
yeah.
approached to do something like this for
yeah.
someone else, and I refused.
Yeah.
But of course, I did not have an official
you
position.
Weren't the Poet Laureate.
I wasn't
yeah.
on any pedestal yeah. or mantelpiece
yeah.
or. Yeah. Whatever. But yeah, I did. I have said no
mm-hmm.
to commissions
mm-hmm.
and to requests.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
anyway.
Yeah, we could talk about this
yes,
for a while.
Later.
I think it's a very interesting issue. And it has to do with a lot of other things in your poetry, too, I think, which when in a book like, not in a book like, in this book, An Amber Necklace from Gdansk, there is a sort of a politicalness to the idea of identity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And to be an American and what it means to be an American, and you know, the issues that we've been struggling with for a long time, the melting pot or the salad bowl, mm-hmm. or whatever, what have you. And I wonder, what is the crossover, or what is the sort of confluence between the politics of identity and the art of identity, or something to that effect? Do you know what I mean?
I almost think it's one and the same.
Yeah.
I really don't think you can split it.
Yeah.
This book, in many ways, was a touchstone book for me. It was certainly not my first collection.
Mm-hmm.
My second full-length collection, I have several chapbooks that were also published mm-hmm. before this, but I have a feeling all my life I've been working, mm-hmm. as a writer, as a poet, all my writing life I've been working mm-hmm. towards, you know, this particular book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a wonderful, right on, you know, you're hitting the nail on the head when you talk about the political power of identity and how it really is melded with your sense of self in a larger sense as an artist, as a human being. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think you could split.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you could split that.
Well, the poems struggle with the idea of what it means to be, or what it is to search or to find mm-hmm. or to be looking for one's ethnic identity. I find it interesting that I think in most poems, or at least when you're finished reading the book, I think you come to the perspective that the speaker of the poems, the persona of the poems, is happy to be American,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. is grateful for that perspective.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to sound jingoistic, but you know, there's a certain pride in national identity mm-hmm. that you don't often find
right.
with very ironic poets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I know there's irony is in some of my mm-hmm. work too. I think, you know, with this particular book, Amber Necklace from Gdansk, I began the project not really knowing what I was going to find.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you do that journey, when you do that traveling into who you are, what's the reflection of your family's history in you, you don't know if you're going to like that family. You don't know if you're going to like that history or the reflection that you see of them and yourself. So I really took a gamble, and I was just really amazed with the family that I found in Poland
mm-hmm.
that was left behind when my four grandparents immigrated. I really was just amazed. And not to say that they all became my close friends, because some I like better than others, mm-hmm. just like any group of people, just like any family.
Yeah.
There's always an uncle. You know, mm-hmm. there's always, you know, a cousin that you'd rather not be in the same room with. But what really amazed me was their great generosity of spirit
mm-hmm.
and just willing to open their lives, open their doors, open their hearts to me and tell me what it was that I wanted and needed to know.
Mm-hmm.
And yet their lives have been so difficult. I mean, there are poems that are not in this book that talk about what happened to my little village when the Gestapo were there. Just
mm.
horrendous, horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
And they survived. They survived. Doi, my village, ended up saving the life of 16 Jewish people, 15 children and one Jewish doctor from Krakow. I had no idea. That's not in the book.
Mm-hmm.
That may be in the next book, but
mm-hmm.
that's a poem that's still germinating and waiting to be written. But what amazed me was how they were able to survive that and come through it still with a sense of hope and a love of life. And when you talk about another sense of the book, with the narrator, with the persona of the person in these poems, being happy and glad that they're on this side of the Atlantic, mm-hmm. you better believe it. Mm-hmm. You better believe
it. Well, the book is probably about finding, in a search for any sort of identity, I suppose, you're finding similarities between cultures and not necessarily calling up the differences, but you're finding similarities that you can't, the similarities that you can find between yourself and your relatives in a place like Poland. Mm. But all the while, in this book, you're saying, well, there may be similarities, but and while Cleveland in the 60s may sometimes appear to be like cities in Poland, mm-hmm. you know, this, mm-hmm. I mean, we can say that about Detroit too, right. and about Buffalo
and
about
Flint.
And Flint, mm-hmm. it's not.
Right. That's right.
And really emphasizing that it's not at all mm-hmm. like those places.
Right.
They don't have the same histories, the people mm-hmm. don't have the same sort of backgrounds mm-hmm. as the people in Poland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting
right.
stuff. We always ask about Michigan in these conversations because mm-hmm. this is the Michigan Writers
right.
Series.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be part of it. This is January 23rd, and it is terrible outside.
Yes, it is. And I'm here. Made it from
came
Grand Rapids.
Through a snowstorm
I am arriving. I have arrived.
She has arrived. You've lived almost your whole life in Michigan now.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, after the Cleveland.
After the Cleveland gig.
You came and never left.
I came to Michigan and I never left. Why?
The question is why?
Well, I came here in the late 60s to go to college, a mm-hmm. Full four-year Rye scholarship. And I met the love of my life here mm-hmm. in Michigan, and he's a Michigan guy, and we just stayed. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no question of going to Columbus or back to Cleveland or Cincinnati. It was just a given that we would stay in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that I'm a Michigan woman now.
Mm-hmm. So a great deal of poetry is landscape, of course.
Yes.
And this is your landscape.
This is.
This agrees with you as mm-hmm. your landscape.
And I could
never. Does that
never,
have anything to do with being Polish?
Yeah, I could never live in Florida. I mean, or Texas, or California. Give me
yeah,
a break. Though
yeah.
they can't drive through
right.
the snow like I drove through
right.
the snow today. And I think a good, you know, you mentioned a good point about the landscape and the landscape of Northern Europe. And so many Poles live in the Midwest, be it Detroit mm-hmm. or Chicago mm-hmm. or Milwaukee. I mean, they're not in Santa Fe. Mm-hmm. You know, they're here in the Great Lakes area. And I think that's part of it, mm-hmm. too.
There's certainly a sense of pride for living in a place like this that has a climate that is uninhabitable to a lot of people from the South or mm. from the West Coast mm-hmm. for 4 to 6 months a year.
Yeah.
And you must develop, I think, some sort of eyes for it, some sort of eyes for the landscape.
You know, I was into, and not only landscape, but weather.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Hawaii. I've been there, you know, a number of times visiting a good friend of mine who teaches there. But the first time I was there, and I did some readings and some workshops, you know what bothered me was the weather. It was sunny every day. I had a real problem with that. I mean, as weird as that sounds, I had a real problem with that sameness of nothing,
yeah.
nothing, but a cloudless, and I mean cloudless blue sky and a bright sun. What is there to look forward to?
Yeah.
That's all you have. Now, landscape-wise, I mean, it's a knock-em-dead, gorgeous landscape. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love Hawaii, but it's that weather that just is always the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I really missed the grayness. It,
yeah.
it may sound weird, but I guess I am where I'm meant to be.
Mm-hmm. There's a line in one of the poems that I remember about one of the cities in Poland being the grayest
Katowice.
The grayest place on earth, yes, or something like that.
Yes, that's one of the first poems in the book. As a matter of fact, when I read that poem, I just tell people from Michigan, imagine Flint, you know, and you get an idea of some of the grit, the urban grit. And it still is. Katowice is still tough in that sense.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, just finally, you mentioned some of the ideas that may be in the next book that have, it sounds like there's going to be somewhat of a follow-up anyway to the Gdansk book. Can you talk about that at all? Is that true?
Yes. A little bit, yeah. It's not going to be a sequel by any means, like volume two.
Right.
But right now, the tentative title is Contour of Absence. Uh-huh. I'll be reading the title poem tonight, as a matter of fact, at my reading. Some of the poems deal with poems inspired by visual art. Mm. And some deal with more, you know, broader issues. But that's what I'm working on right now. Mm-hmm. I pretty much all the poems are done. It's just a matter of organizing and sequencing the manuscript right now.
Oh, really? So you're about ready to... Do you have a publisher for it already?
Well, Louisiana State University Press, that published Amber Necklace from Gdansk, has optioned the book, which means, for lay terms, not that there is a 100% guarantee that they will publish, but they have optioned my next manuscript, which means they have first dibs in looking at it. And they are very interested. It's in my contract, and they'll be hopefully getting it later this year.
How did you wind up with Louisiana State University as a press?
This is interesting. The last time I read here, which was about 5 years ago, when the Michigan Writers Series had its inaugural year, I was still working on this book. It wasn't even accepted yet for publication. I was still, you know, working on the poems, and I had sent it out to a few places. It had been a finalist in like three different national poetry competitions. And a friend of mine suggested, why don't you send it to LSU Press? I said, oh, brother, I mean, they get, you know, I'd be competing against, you know, some of the top names, you know, in the poetry business. Liesl Mueller publishes with them, Fred Chappelle, Robert Penn Warren, that's his press.
Oh,
I mean, you know, I am just a little poet from Michigan. And anyway, I decided to take their advice, and I sent it to them. And it took them a year before they sent me the letter with the intent to publish.
Wow.
So a whole year. But when I did get the letter, they said that the editorial board has unanimously approved this book for publication, which I found out later rarely happens. Usually it's just a majority vote. So it really struck a chord with the editorial board, and I'm very, very happy.
Excellent.
And honored that it did.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you.